It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Where the traditional justice system fails victims of sexual assault, a newer approach called restorative justice succeeds. That's according to our guest, who's helped expand it in Wisconsin and beyond. She tells us how it works, and we learn about its intangible effect on survivors. Are you a survivor of sexual assault who used restorative justice to work through the healing process? What was that like? And what part of the process helped you heal the most? Was it an apology, an acknowledgement of your feelings? Why was this helpful? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Join us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet at WPR Mornings. Janine Guskey is a retired Marquette University Law School professor, former director of the Marquette Law School's Restorative Justice Initiative. Janine was previously a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. Janine, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you. Good morning.
For those who haven't heard it, heard about it before, tell us, what is restorative justice?
Well, it is a philosophical approach to trying to heal harm after it's occurred. And more specifically on the area we're discussing today, it's a victim-focused process to help the victim and others around him or her to heal. And so unlike the criminal justice system, where the whole system is geared at figuring out who committed the crime, whether we can prove him or her guilty, and how we're going to sentence that person, this is really figuring out who was harmed, what the nature of the harm was, and hopefully work toward healing. More specifically, I think we're going to talk this morning about one of the processes that are often used in restorative justice, which is victim-offender dialogue. That is, if a survivor is interested, she or he can go through a process where ultimately they can meet with the offender face-to-face and have a dialogue.
Where do we typically see restorative justice applied? Is it mostly in the context of crime, or does it go beyond that?
It clearly goes beyond that. Traditionally, I think in the United States, we've seen it primarily grow in the area of crime. Now the fastest-growing area is in schools, on everything from bullying to truancy and related issues. But I've used it for racial profiling, dealing with issues between police and community. I've used it in unsportsmanlike behavior with athletes and their coaches. We've used it anytime that there's harm. You can use these processes to try to open a dialogue and to be able to have people address some of their concerns. But I want to say on the forefront that all this takes incredible amount of preparation and working with all the parties before you have this dialogue.
Of course, sexual assault and how our system treats it has been top of mind for many Americans lately. So let's talk about how restorative justice can work within that this context. How would that work?
Yeah. Well, and I have done a number of these kinds of cases. Most sexual assault cases are handled post-conviction. That is, after the case has been through the system, an offender has been found guilty and often sentenced to prison. Now, there's no reason it has to have followed that path, but that's how most of them are. The first thing that happens is at some point a survivor makes a decision, and I'm going to use she, although we have male survivors, that she desires to have such a meeting. That's often in conjunction with her therapy. Sometimes it's years and years after the crime. And we will have her into the office to have a discussion with her about why she wants to meet with the offender. Many times it is a desire to look at the offender in the eyes and tell him or her what the harm is that has been caused because of the assault, not just the physical harm, but primarily the psychological harm, which can be immense and irrevocable. Then, after we have that discussion with the victim, and assuming that the victim's motivations are good and she has some questions she wants to ask the offender, there may be some other things, we then go and find the offender and meet with the offender, who's often very surprised that a victim wants to meet with him, and we talk to him about it. If he says, I didn't commit the crime, I wasn't there, it's a bit of the end of the discussion because we don't have these meetings to decide who did it. But if he admits he did something and he was there, even if he mitigates it, we have a discussion with him about the possibility of meeting with a victim. It has to be consensual on all sides. And whatever he says, then we go back to the victim and said, you know, he's going to give you these kinds of answers. Do you still want to meet with him? And we go back and forth between the parties, often for 6 or 9 months before we ultimately have the meeting. And then eventually get to a place where they're both prepared and the facilitator takes the victim to wherever the offender is, and we have a multi-hour dialogue. The primary advantage to all this is those kinds of processes, questions, answers can never happen in the courtroom. I sat in sexual assault court. I saw what happened, and almost always the victim sort of felt out there hanging after the offender was sentenced and never got answers to many of the questions he has. So it gives her an opportunity to get those answers, which often help in the healing process.
So does this cost anything? And if so, who pays?
No, in Wisconsin, our tradition has not been to charge. The ones I do are pro bono. The University of Wisconsin Law School, there's a program run by Jonathan Scheer, who's one of my former students. He works with clinical students. It is also free, so there's no expense to it. We provide this as a service to people.
Is this available statewide or just in Madison?
No, we do them statewide. It depends because I'm semi-retired, but so Jonathan's program takes more than I do, and there are a few other facilitators available statewide, but we find where who is located closest to where the victim is so that she or he can easily get to meetings with us, and then we travel all over the state because many of these offenders are in prisons all over the state. But both of us have worked in northern Wisconsin and western Wisconsin on particular cases.
So what does restorative justice offer survivors that the traditional justice system doesn't? You alluded to this earlier, but I'd like you to elaborate just a little bit more.
Sure. Well, the first thing is it allows a survivor to look at the offender and say, this is what has happened to my life because of what you did to me. You know, my marriage broke up. I no longer felt safe. I didn't feel comfortable dating anymore. I'm a different person. My family broke up over it. All the ripples, as we call it, that occur as a result of a sexual assault. And there are ripples. The deep, deep impact of an assault changes people's lives, and they talk about their life before and their life after. So she can tell him that, look him in the face, tell him that. She then can ask him questions. Who are you? If it's a stranger assault, why did you pick me out? Where I was, what I was wearing, why did you pick my apartment? Because there's a lot of fear that the offender is going to come back and attack, and that's rarely the case, but the victim has those fears. Then the victim will say, well, tell me about your life. Tell me how you grew up. Have you done this before? And then she will move into, what have you been doing in prison since you got here? Have you been in program? You know, because the victims have a deep desire that the offender not recommit an offense against someone else.
Jeanine Geske, we need to take a break here, but we will continue our conversation after the news. Jeanine Geske, retired Marquette University Law School professor and former Justice of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Where the traditional justice system fails victims of sexual assault, a newer approach called restorative justice can succeed. That's according to our guest, who's helped expand it in Wisconsin and beyond. We're talking about how it works, and we're learning about its intangible effect on survivors. What do you think our traditional justice system misses when addressing sexual abuse? What can it do better? How should it change? And do you see this process of restorative justice as being helpful? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email, and you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Janine Geske is a retired Marquette University Law School professor, former director of the Marquette Law School's Restorative Justice Initiative, was previously a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. Janine, before we broke for news, you were telling us about the advantages or the things that a restorative justice program can offer that the regular justice system cannot. I please finish that thought, and then we'll continue our discussion.
One of the things that happens often in a courtroom, if an offender has pled guilty, is that often the offender quickly says some kind of apology to the victim. That apology frequently falls on deaf ears because everybody's assuming that the defendant's saying that to get a better deal from the judge. And so victims don't really put too much stock in those. In a face-to-face meeting, an offender, if he is truly sorry or she's sorry, they can express that often through tears, often talking about now recognizing the kind of harm that was caused. And that can be very meaningful to a victim. Some victims come into restorative justice processes wanting to forgive the offender. They think that that's part of their journey. Others do not. And I always tell them, you know, wait till you see the offender and listen to him or her and make that decision, because forgiveness means things to different people. But we have on a number of occasions had cases both in sexual assaults or in homicides where a victim at the end of the meeting will actually hug the offender, or at least say, "I forgive you," or we'll say things like, "I wish I could forgive you today. I'm not ready yet." And to be able to have those very intimate, safe discussions with an offender truly, truly impacts the victim. I've never had a victim go through one of these and say, "I was sorry I went through it." They all have some amount of healing after they've had an open opportunity in a safe environment to have that kind of discussion.
And is this process limited to survivors whose abusers have actually been convicted?
Well, that's where most of the cases come from. So there are cases, for example, and we heard about one a few weeks ago with Justice Kavanaugh, where cases are not reported or cases are not brought to court. The question is whether the offender, if you can find him or her or know who he is, you have to get consent to do this, and they have to admit something, they did something. But it doesn't have to have gone through the court process. And if you can think of an example, perhaps on campus or in a school setting where there's a lesser degree, where it isn't a full-fledged sexual assault, but maybe uncomfortable behavior or something, those are really appropriate for a victim to be able to tell an offender the impact. And people are truly impacted when they hear those stories, not realizing that they've hurt somebody so deeply. We did some restorative justice circles, which is another process on unsportsmanlike behavior, and some female athletes were telling some male athletes from another school that when somebody yells that they're fat while they're playing basketball, that some of those girls develop anorexia or bulimia based on those taunts. And and a student of color being able to say, being called a racist name from the stands, and how that impacts him, it really can infect people who hear that and make them think before they engage in that behavior again.
So you have been, you're retired, but or at least partially, but you still spend a lot of your time on restorative justice. Why do you care so deeply about this line of work?
My husband laughs that now I work full-time for free. I love this work. It really, for me, there's a spiritual base. It just, for me, I don't inject my religion in my faith. But there is incredible transformational, for me, there's a spiritual oversight on this, that I have seen such amazing things happen. I've worked with amazing survivors, the strength that they have. I mean, I had one man whose daughter was killed in a drunk driving. She was a student at UW, and he came in and said to me that he wanted to meet with the offender because he wanted to make his life better, because he wanted to give meaning to his daughter's death. And I think, would I ever be in those shoes? And so to be able to have people like that meet the offender and have those discussions is really very powerful. And the international and national studies on crimes generally, often smaller crimes, is that these processes, in fact, do reduce the amount of recidivism, increase victim satisfaction with the system, and also increases the amount of restitution that ultimately gets paid. The United States is behind the time on doing this. These processes are occurring all over the world. I actually went to Iran a couple years ago to a conference on restorative justice, and it's in the European Union documents, it's in the UN documents, and these processes are being used in lots and lots of cultures. In order to heal, in order to have some healing, we know that just jailing somebody may protect the public for a period of time, but it doesn't get to the heart of what we need to do, which is have offenders understand the harm and to be able to heal the victims.
It sounds like restorative justice has a very therapeutic effect on survivors, but you're very careful not to call it therapy. Why is that?
Well, I'm not a therapist. And so I'm not doing therapy. In fact, especially in sexual assault cases, I always inquire as to whether the victim has been through therapy. I'd like to talk to the therapist. I prefer, if I can, to have the therapist engaged in the process. We provide a process that we listen, that we support a victim in talking to him or her about what happened. And to be able to go through this process, we are the facilitator. But we're not looking at the deep psychological. I mean, I can see some of the changes that happen, but I'm not there to try to push those or to decide what's best for a victim. But I have to say, you know, not only has every victim that I've worked with been happy with their process, or at least felt that it did some good, every offender has also given me that feedback, that some of them say it is the most important thing that they've ever engaged in. You know, they can't believe the victim's willing to listen to them, and they really do feel like they're helping to heal some harm by be willing to sit in this very difficult conversation.
More colleges are looking at restorative justice as a way to address sexual assault. Betsy DeVos, U.S. Education Secretary, has shown support for alternative approaches to handling those cases. Do you see this as a positive change?
Well, it's a positive change to be talking about it. I'm concerned that we don't get in a place where we're forcing victims to have this as an alternative to the court system. First of all, a lot of offenders just need to go through the court system for supervision purposes to make sure that, you know, that other victims are not being developed. But I think that some of the Department of Education was looking, well, maybe we could have restorative justice instead of a formal disciplinary process. And a lot of us in the field are very concerned about that.
Okay.
First of all, if you're doing it really quickly after the crime, often the victim is still very traumatized.
We're about out of time here. For those interested in learning more about restorative justice, very quickly, where can they find more information?
Well, the primary office that takes in requests is the Wisconsin Department of Corrections Victim Services.
Okay.
People can email me at Marquette, Janine.Geske@Marquette.edu, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
And we'll have to leave it there. Janine Geske, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. My pleasure.
Janine Gasky, retired Marquette University Law School professor, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. It's the Morning Show.